Going live in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Leading through adversity, unmasking leadership.
Welcome back, Podcast Universe. I am your host, like always, Jesus Eddie Campa of Leading Through Adversity, Unmasking Leadership. I'd like to start off by wishing my daughter a very happy birthday. Actually, her birthday was yesterday, but we're recording the show today, so it's kind of a belated birthday. But little girl got everything she wanted. She is daddy's princess, so you got to take care of her, right? All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Leading Through Adversity, Unmasking Leadership. I hope you enjoyed our last episode where we interviewed Mr. Earl Morrison, a former police chief, a current compliance manager for CLEAT, and a renowned author who has written his second book. If you haven't read his first book, Leadership Lessons Learned, Leading and Learning with Character by Earl Morrison, I highly recommend it. It's a good book. It's an easy read. It's a short read, but it's filled with valuable information. And it's a book that you will really enjoy. And like always, we ask that when you get a book and you read it, pass it along, because knowledge is power and sharing is caring. And that's what we do here at Leading with Adversity. We're trying to build a network of leaders, a place where leaders can feel safe and can come onto our podcast and listen to us, share their stories of the adversity that they have faced at any given time or the adversity that they're currently facing. Because, hey, you know what? As leaders, you got to remember one thing. You're human, too. A lot of times people believe that just because you're the leader of an organization, you're not human, that you don't have any feelings or that you're this callous individual. And it's very rare when you find people to be able to say that, hey, you know what? You know, this is a great leader and everybody agrees. So, you know, we have a common ground here at Leading Through Adversity, Unmasking Leadership. It's a safe place where leaders can come and talk about their issues, talk about their experience and pass it on to the future leaders of America. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's start episode 3, Leading Through Adversity, Unmasking Leadership. I am Jesus Eddie Campa.
There he is.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah. What's up, man?
Oh, not much, man. You were able to figure it out? Was it kind of difficult, or?
Yeah, you know, I'm not a real tech-savvy kind of guy.
Yeah, well, you know, they told me the same thing when I started doing this. They said, you can't mess it up. Well, I messed it up a lot of times. All right, everybody, welcome back to Leading Through Adversity, Unmasking Leadership. Again, I'm your host, Jesus Eddie Campa, and today I have the privilege of having an individual that I had the privilege of meeting back in November of 2019 during our time at the Department of Homeland Security Leadership Academy 8th session, which was held November 12th through the 22nd up there in at FLETC. And I got the opportunity to meet this wonderful guy, and it's just an honor and a privilege to have him be on my show. As I got to meet this gentleman and I got to learn about him and stuff like that, and it turns out that we were both law enforcement officers in the same state, and we both have a history in our sheriff's office. And this man is just by far a natural born leader. He has got it all. He's got the charisma, the charm, even the good looks, right? Yeah, so I'm going to tell you, man, it's my honor and my privilege to introduce you to a good friend of mine, Gus. And Gus, you know what? It's funny because I know Gus is your middle name or your nickname. I don't even know your full name other than it's Tommy, right?
Tommy, yes. Tommy Gustav, G-U-S-T-A-V. It's German. Tommy Gustav Handke.
Awesome. Well, I'm just going to go and keep calling you Gus, because that's the way I met you, and that's the way I got to love you. So, you know, Gus, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself and, how long you've been, how long you've had a role in leadership?
Well, thank you. And thank you for the introduction. You're too kind. Currently, I work for the Sheriff's Department in Carter County, which is here in Ardmore, Oklahoma. And I, prior to that, I'd been a police chief in the city of Minco, which is where I was born and raised. And then I was a police chief in the community now where I live, which is the city of Hilton, Oklahoma, which is west of Ardmore. And then during my time here with the city, they approached me about going to work for the sheriff's department. And I've been to work, went to work over for the sheriff's department there in 2011, had a short break during a, during an election run, and then came back. And so, you know, I've been in law enforcement now. This is my 21st year in law enforcement. And off and on throughout the course of, you know, my career, and then early on, you know, I was subjected to a lot of situations. I think a lot of times people find themselves in leadership positions without even realizing what's occurring. Leadership, I think, isn't always based on a title or a certain position. And what you find, I think, as you go along, are there are certain people that are more active in leadership roles, in positions where maybe you wouldn't expect it as much. I think there are definitely people who are more predisposed to leadership roles than other people. I think that's a fair statement.
Right. Well, you know, you're absolutely right. And that's one of the things that we talk about here Leading Through Adversity. One of the things is that when you unmask leadership, you said it perfectly. It's almost like we rehearsed this and we actually didn't. You know, I call it unmasking leadership because of something that you just said. A lot of the times we don't even realize that you're in a leadership role because you don't have a formal title. It's just that people naturally have gravitated to you. And, you know, we know that leadership is being able to influence people to do things or follow you or be able to influence people to do something that you want them to do or behave in a certain manner. So, you know, one of my roles as a leader began, you know, back when I was, I don't know, maybe 8 years old. You know, everybody kind of gravitated towards me in the neighborhood. You know, everybody came over to my house. We wanted to play. And it was like, hey, Eddie, what do you want to play? What do you want to do? And I was kind of the decision maker all the time. Never really thought about it that was a leadership role, but it was an informal, you know, kind of leader thing. And that's kind of where it all started. So you hit it right on the head, you know. And I often tell people, or people, you know, often say there's always a guy in that department who doesn't have a formal title, but he's the leader of the organization because everybody just kind of flocks to him and looks for him for advice and stuff like that. And so you're absolutely right. That's a good point. Tell us about the time. Tell us about our time there at the Leadership Academy, Gus. Tell us all about that. How much fun did we have at that academy?
I was truly impressed with the people that were affiliated with the training and the speakers that they brought in and the people who facilitated the training. There are some very good people there. They were approachable and they were really down to earth. You know, when you're going to go to some type of training event and you're going to go out of state or you're going to go someplace kind of foreign and you don't really know anybody, I think for some people, you know, not everybody, but for some people, I think that they don't feel very comfortable right off the bat. It takes them to settle a little bit to settle down. But the people that I was around, both in the class and the people who were affiliated with the training, were very, very good people, and they made you feel very comfortable very quickly. There was a lot of good information that can be gleaned from the Department of Homeland Security Leadership Academy. I think it's a very good training. It's not, there's a lot of classroom, as you well know, and for anybody that wants a little bit more insight into that, you're going to spend a lot of time in the classroom. It's not as maybe as interactive as some people would like, but I do well. The classroom stuff doesn't bother me. they do a pretty good job of keeping your attention, as you know, because we were there for almost, 2 weeks, 10 days, 11 days.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to keep people's attention, you know, unless you've got pretty dynamic speakers, or you're covering interesting topics or bringing a lot of information to the table. And I do believe that it accomplished those goals.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, those were 2 weeks that I totally enjoyed myself, you know. Being in law enforcement over 27 years, I've had the pleasure of attending many, many leadership courses, a lot of trainings. And, you know, when I was invited to attend the Homeland Security Leadership Academy, I kind of thought to myself, oh, my God, here we go. Another leadership academy. It's going to be the same old, same old. But, you know, when we got there, I met you on the first day that we were there. You know, we were outside, you know, grilling some burgers and stuff with our mentor, Brian. And we all just kind of clicked. I mean, it was like the whole group just clicked, and it just rocking and rolled from there. And it was the best 2 week training I have ever attended. The information that was put out, the speakers that were put out, and you know, just the amount of people that were there, everybody from, you know, Oklahoma, New York, LA, you know, Florida. You know, we even had the legendary Longmire with us there, you know, from Wisconsin, and that was pretty cool. So
yeah,
you know, you're right. It was really exciting. But you know, during the time that we talked out there at the academy, you know, we would break off because you said there was a lot of classroom time, but we also had a lot of time to network and get to meet each other. Why don't you tell us the importance? This is something that a lot of leaders, especially new leaders, don't understand. Why is it so important to network with people from other parts and other agencies from around the country?
Well, I think there's always something that you can learn from someone else who has shared a similar experience to that of your own. You know, personalities are different, and methodology is different from person to person. But I think that, you know, when you really get to sit down and have a conversation that's kind of in a relaxed environment with someone who may be experiencing some of the same things that you have, or you're able to get a different take on their approach to certain things, it does a lot to make you more well-rounded. I feel like, and, you know, I don't want to speak out of term, but the problem that I see with most police officers, younger police officers nowadays, and deputies and people that we come into contact with, is they're, you know, they don't understand the all-encompassing aspect of the job, especially in law enforcement. You know, it's not just a few things. It covers a wide range of duties. And you need to have a well-rounded skill set in order to be truly effective. And that, a lot of that is determined by the level of training that you receive and that you participate in, because that training pays off later.
Right. Absolutely. I think you're right. You know, we were kind of talking about this before we started the interview. We're talking about, you know, we're a little bit old school, this whole technology, being able to, you know, create a podcast on a phone and all this stuff was, you know, is kind of new to us, but you're absolutely right. I mean, I think that today us leaders, you know, you as in the leadership role that you're in, the leadership role that I'm in, you know, we're having a difficult time recruiting the individual with the right mindset to do this job. Not, only because times have changed and they have evolved, and it is a little bit harder to find that well-rounded individual. Now it's a little bit harder. It's not impossible, because there's many, many great new officers out there, but I think you spoke volumes by saying that. And you know, so let's talk a little bit about something. You know, I told people that this show wasn't going to be just about law enforcement, because, you know, that's where the majority of my time is. But, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. You know, I own a private security business. I own a speaking business. And, you know, in my past, I've also owned, you know, three different restaurants and stuff. So I've done a lot, gotten into a lot of things. You know, I owned a wrestling company. So, you know, tell us a little bit about the time that you know you served as a city manager as well. So you weren't always just involved in law enforcement.
Yeah, I while I was the police chief here in the city where I live, the city manager that we had at the time, Mr. Brugger, he was getting up and in age a little bit and was thinking about retirement. And of course, he was married to a woman at the time, and she kind of had some health concerns, and he was a really good man. He did a good job of taking care of her, and he's a really, really good person. But he decided to step away from being the city manager. So for about 5 months or so, I did both. I was a police chief here and the city manager. The city charter had an addendum or whatever in there where it was possible for the city manager to also be a department head or whatever, have you. So that experience was quite a little ride there.
So which one did you enjoy more, the being a city manager or being in law enforcement? Obviously, I think I know which one you're going to choose.
Well, they hired a new city manager after I got done doing it. How about
that? All right, everybody, welcome back. Here we are with my good friend Gus. And like I said, you know, Gus, for those of us who might have just joined us here at the Breaking Point, why don't you tell us a little bit about how we met, how we got to know each other, and just, you know, some of the things that only us Oklahoman, I guess I'm an honorary Oklahoman now. I've been there for almost a year and 7 months, so I don't know if that quite makes me a resident yet. But why don't you tell us a little bit about how we met and some of the experiences that my little dog is barking. I hope that's probably coming on the podcast right now. That's my little Yorkie. Anyway, why don't you tell us a little bit about that, Gus, if you don't mind.
You know, I met Eddie at the Department of Homeland Security Leadership Academy, what we were discussing before. And he was one of the students, or you want to call us out there, one of the trainees. And we just, you know, there were, like you said earlier, you know, you and there were a lot of good people there. I was really taken aback by just there were a lot of really accomplished people there who were pretty humble. And that was really refreshing to see. And just a lot of people who were you know, very forthcoming and just very honest, open, good people. It was a good experience. I think at this point, now, you know, having done this for the length of time, I think someone like you or I has or whatever, to be around some people like that at this point, because it was really refreshing to see a lot of people who were, you know, some people in some had some pretty demanding responsibilities, who, you know, high ranking people from across the nation that were just really, really good, solid people.
Yeah. Awesome. It was a lot of fun, you know? So with that said, Gus, you know, I plan on getting our mentor on here at someday sooner than later, hopefully. You know, Brian had some interesting stories from his time out there. I, you know, like I said, Gus is just one of those guys that you automatically gravitate to. You know, you were kind of one of the informal leaders of our group there. You know, everybody kind of gravitated towards you, and you just have that natural charisma, the natural charm that people just want, like being around you. How did you develop that? Is that something that just came natural to you, or do you even notice it, or is it just when people tell you about it?
I don't really pay attention to it. I think it's like you said, it's just every once in a while someone will make a comment like that. And I appreciate it. I'm grateful for those things, the nice things you're saying, because I, you know, those are the things you want to live up to. And I, you know, I, I know, you know, we mentioned, you know, our faith, and I know you're a believer and I'm a believer in the Lord Christ, and, you know, being humble, and being a, you know, a servant leader is very important. And, I think that the problem that you have with a lot of people nowadays is they want these positions or whatever, so they can, you know, I don't know. One of the things that used to drive me crazy, and I don't want to get off on a rant, but, you know, when you had to deal with city council members, because I had several little periods of my career there where I had to deal with city council members, and, you know, every time you'd have a city council election and you'd get new people on the city council, one of the unfortunate things about it was that most of the time they had an agenda before they got on there.
And, right.
You know, they would get on and the city council, and all of a sudden they were going to come in there, and instead of looking at the big picture, it was about a certain issue that they were upset about that motivated them to even run for it in the first place. And you know, you're there for the greater good. Sometimes you have to sacrifice some of the things that maybe you're not happy with or that you don't like for the greater good of the people, you know, and that's part of the deal. If you're in this because you think that, you know, you'll get on the city council or you'll become a police chief or a city manager or a mayor or a state representative or just whatever, and that's going to make you somebody, you know, and that's your goal in doing that, then you're, you know, your motivation's not in the right, from the right spot, you know, from the right, you're just, your heart's not in the right place. So.
Yeah, those are some good points. So you know, you bring up servant leadership, and while we all know that servant leadership is very important, you bring up faith, and we know faith is very important. And you and me, you know, you and I, you know, the role I came into, you know, the adversity that I faced coming in and the adversity that I continue to face in my current position, you know, it's been an uphill battle, and you know, it's trying to change a culture, especially an image that people have of the organization. And I think we're slowly but surely getting there. But you're right, you know, you have to do the best that you can. And as leaders, we often take the blame for things that we didn't do or we're not aware of. And yet the instant that there is some praise to be given or acknowledgement, the first thing that true leaders do is we give it to our staff. You know, we give it to the soldiers, the troops that did the work, you know, because that's what we do. But let me ask you this, you know, you brought up some good points. One, and it's a three-part question or two-part question. I don't even know what it is, but one, let me ask you, why do you think it's important that leaders have, you know, and I said this before in one of the other episodes, this is not a faith-based program or a faith-based podcast, but I am a man of faith. And just about every leader out there believes in our Lord Savior, or they believe in something. Why is it so important for a leader to have, you know, faith in God or a belief system, you know, to keep them going?
Well, when you look at this is the deal. Nobody's perfect, and you're surrounded in a profession with a bunch of people that have problems, and you know, it has a tendency to rub off on you. Sometimes your language is not going to be the best. Sometimes your attitude is not going to be the best. You know, you have to have that spiritual grounding to bring you back to a place to where you don't get overwhelmed. And also, you know, and I don't know what your personal experience is with your faith are, but you know, I was raised that way. I believe it. There are things that have happened to me that have strengthened my faith and have caused me to have certainty in my faith. But you know, at the end of the day, for me, what's your purpose? And if you can't find purpose and you don't have anything to believe in and you can't find purpose, then you're just spinning your wheels anyway. I don't care what you're doing. You know, there are a lot of people And, you know, maybe they haven't had those kind of experiences. You know, they haven't had anything that proved faith to them. You know, God is a rewarder of the faithful. You know, there are plenty of examples, and there will come a time in your life where you'll be faced with something where, you know, money's not going to help you. Your friends can't help you. You don't have control of the situation. And the only answer, you know, is God. I mean, and how many people do you see over and over again that, you know, finally have that experience or have had that experience and, you know, can relate that to you? You know, for me, it's just your purpose is derived through my purpose, I should say, because, you know, teach their own. My purpose is derived through faith. And through that purpose, then I'm able to go to work, and it's not me, but it's God accomplishing things through me.
Exactly. You know, and that's the same thing. You know, I was born and raised in a Catholic home, and with, you know, I was raised by my grandmother. She was very strong Catholic. So, you know, religion was a big part of my life, you know, and just like kids, you know, there was times where I questioned my faith, and, you know, I had issues and with my God, and, you know, my relationship with God has been, adverse to say the least, but, you know, as I got older and things happened in my life and I got, you know, pushed into this direction and to being a law enforcement officer, getting leadership positions, being blessed with a beautiful home, beautiful family, you know, money and all of this stuff. And that was, you know, because of hard work. But I'm going to tell you right now, I ain't half as skilled to have the things that I have. So obviously, you know, that was because of the grace of God. You know, there's been a lot of programs that I've initiated, you know, like the No Colors, No Labels program, the Anti-Bullying Coalition, things that all of a sudden, you know, I just dream up in my mind someday and I put them into effect. And people will ask me, how'd you come up with this idea? And I'm like, I have no idea. I mean, all glory be to God, because he's the one who put that vision in my mind and then gave me the tools to be able to do it, because there is no way in God's green earth that I would have just been able to do it. So absolutely. I mean, you know, we all have a purpose, and once you realize what that purpose is, you come to know who gave you that purpose and what your true calling is. So you're absolutely right on that. And I think that true leaders out there, you know, I think the majority of them, you know, have some kind of faith-based following, and that's very important. But so I appreciate that, Gus. Now, the next question I have, you know, is, a lot of times people look at us leaders as supermen. They think that we're invincible, that we don't have feelings, or that we're hardened or cold-blooded, you know. But in reality, we as leaders, I mean, we come home at the end of the day having to have made all of these decisions that we've had to make throughout the day. And some of those decisions that we've had to make impact other people. But a lot of the times those people, you know, people don't see all the thought process that goes into making those decisions and having to take those adverse reactions against somebody, you know, what would you tell somebody that's starting up in a leadership role that maybe is experienced that type of adversity, that maybe they're about to discipline their first person or fire their first subordinate or something like that? I mean, because that was something that I was never prepared to do. I was never trained on how to do something like that. So even to this day, you know, I struggle when I have to reprimand or fire somebody, because it's not something we enjoy doing. So what would you tell somebody that's just starting out their career and hasn't been exposed to this part of leadership?
That's an interesting aspect of being in a upper management position, and ultimately upper management is synonymous with leadership, or should be. And that is one of the things I think that's hard for most people, because my advice before we get into the other, because I think that's kind of a two-part question also. My first part answer is, be good to everyone, whether or not they reciprocate your goodness or not. Because at the end of the day, as long as you have treated people right and you've been good to everyone, no matter whether a relationship sours or you have to discipline or terminate an employee, as long as you've treated them right and treated them fairly and been good to them, even though they haven't maybe been good to you in return, that's what's expected. And I say that's what's expected from a faith-based standpoint. Ultimately, when you encounter a situation where you're going to have to administer discipline to a subordinate, or you're considering terminating someone or whatever, one of the other things that I think is important is, you know, most people in general, I think when they progress through the ranks and get to a point where they're in an upper management position, a lot of times they often forget what it was like when they were on the other side of the desk. And I think for someone, when you're going to make a decision about an employee, that decision might impact that employee's wife, children, maybe their mother's living with them, maybe they're taking care of, one of their family members that may be disabled. There are countless scenarios but that's the important thing. Make sure that, the actions that you're taking are reasonable and they're right under the circumstances, and don't get so carried away with where you are now that you don't remember where you have been.
Right, absolutely. Good point. Thanks, Gus. So, we've been talking about all these, delicate issues and roles that we've played and stuff like that. But Gus, like I said, when we were out there at that training, man, you were just the life of the party, man. You had some stories that, they just make great TV, man. It's like we've got to make a TV show of Gus here. So my favorite story, Gus, that whole time was the story of you and this alligator. Everybody, we call you, the alligator hunter, and I guess, Oklahoma right now, everybody's going crazy with the Tiger King and stuff, but they haven't had the pleasure of meeting the Gator King. So why don't you tell us, if you don't mind sharing that story with us, if you could really quick.
Man, I first off, I don't know about you, but the Joe Exotic stuff is just wearing me out. People, I've got friends from out of state that are calling me, asking me if that animal park or whatever is open up there. And I honestly don't know. I haven't watched that thing. I don't know. I mean, I knew who he was. I saw him in a parade one time when he was running for governor or something during one of those times. And somebody mentioned to me maybe that was on the show. I don't know. The alligator story is just, it's kind of a crazy deal. There was a guy building some fence, and he calls down, he calls 911 because he says that he is building this fence, and he heard something hissing at him, and an alligator had charged him or something down by this pond dam, and we're all thinking, because you know how it is, man. You don't know if this dude is high or what's going on, and so he's talking to the dispatcher, and I'm like, okay, so we go out there and get out there, and sure enough, I mean, there's an alligator in this pond, and it had, there was a couple other littler ones, babies or whatever, and had a guy with me named Glenn Emberling, and he was just a sweetheart guy, and he passed away a couple years ago, but he was a Vietnam veteran, and he had survived he had been in the Vietnam War, and he was there during the Tet Offensive and had survived some pretty pretty serious stuff while he was over there. And he was a good guy, but I mean, he wasn't a very big guy either. And so after I got there and saw the alligator, I called him and had him come out there, you know, and Glenn got a dog. We got a catch pole like for a dog, you know, and baited this alligator up to the bank with like some hot dogs or something. I can't even remember what it was. You know, all of a sudden, little Glenn, you know, he's about $1.25 in the rain, you know, and he tosses the catch pole, you know, around this alligator, and it goes to thrashing around, and they're flopping around, and he flops up on the bank, and it's all Glenn can do to get him, and it was get him and like tape his, you know, I mean, you don't know I've never handled it like an alligator. I mean, we're not talking about like a baby alligator. Like this one he caught was big. I mean, it was probably like 4.5 or 5 feet. I mean, it's a pretty good size alligator. I don't know anything about it. It's the first one I've ever seen, you know, outside of TV or whatever. And, you know, he's like telling me, hey, we need to tape its legs back and do all this stuff. And you know, I did remember from watching a TV show or something that, like, you know, they have a hard time opening their mouth, I guess, you know, but like they have like a tremendous amount of strength when they close it. So we, you know, we like duct taped his jaws shut and had his legs taped up and took him down. And I'm like watering him in the driveway there at the police department. Cause like, it was hot that day. He looked, you know, looked like his skin was drying out, or like watering him in the driveway. And it was just a big mess. We called the game warden, and I didn't realize it at the time, but I guess they're native here to some parts of Oklahoma, which I did not know. But like down in the Red River Basin down there, I guess there are some, or, you know, more than what I would probably expect in that area. And so he took him down there. But, you know, Glenn had a heck of a time getting him up on the bank. It was pretty entertaining to watch. It would have been a lot funnier in person, but it was a pretty fun day.
Well, okay, but you're leaving out the best part of the story, Gus.
Which one? Which part?
When you took the alligator back and you were waiting before the game warden got there, what were you doing to the alligator?
Well, I mean, they had came out there and like measured him, and I was watering him with we had like a water hose and everything, and I had hooked it up to the deal, and like he's sitting out there and it was hot. I felt sorry for him. You know, he's sitting there looking like, what's going on? And I'm just sitting there kind of watering him on the driveway because we had the water hose, and, you know, and I guess it did what it was supposed to do and kept him hot, or kept him cooled off and whatever. But it was just, that's just kind of one of those deals. One of my friends, you know, he worked up in the village in Oklahoma City area, which is a little community there. And I, you know, they had caught a python one time or something, you know, like a 12-foot python or something. And I remember, you know, thinking when they caught that, like, oh my gosh, you know, it's, you know, something like that. I'm probably not going to have to deal with anything like that. And then, you know, here I am years later and we catch an alligator. I didn't think I was ever going to end up, you know, encountering an alligator or whatever, especially around here, you know, but, you know, more, you know, better you are, you know.
You know, the thing is, you know, for our listening audience, if you could only picture Gus, how tall are you? You're like
6'2".
Yeah, so Gus is a 6'2", used to be this bodybuilding guy, massive man, and he just wrestled this alligator, and it's alligator's taped up, and like you said, I don't know what to do with an alligator. I've never had to deal with an alligator, but I'm trying to draw a picture to people here. So then Gus says, so I take the alligator and I tie up this water hose, and I'm thinking, well, the alligator must be hot and he doesn't have any water. So naturally Gus thinks, well, I might as well water the alligator. So Gus gets the water hose and he starts watering the alligator. And the look on Gus when he's telling us this story, he's just so nonchalant, like, well, what? I'm watering the alligator, you know? And when the warden shows up, the game warden, I think, is what you said, is like, so this game warden says, what are you doing? He says, I don't know. I just caught this gator. I'm just watering it. And then I think the warden asked you, well, is there any more? And you said, I don't know. I'm watering this one. You go catch the other ones.
There were several other little ones out there, you know, and I was like, we never did get them. Like, don't know what happened to him. Couldn't catch him, you know. But
oh my god, but that was hilarious. You had to have been there. Like, we had some great times out there, and you know, I miss the guys, and you know, I'm going to try to get them all on here at one point or the other. So, you know, Gus, here at Leading Through Adversity, we believe in preparing leaders with the truth about leadership. So we call this segment Unmasking Leadership. While leadership is a great thing, what is the one thing you wish someone had told you about leadership that you learned or discovered the hard way?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Don't sell people short, but don't give people too much credit. There's got to be a balance, because this is the deal. You set expectations for yourself, and you try to impose those expectations on other people's oftentimes inadvertently, but everyone is different. And when you set goals or you have expectations, you have to understand some people may not think the same way that you do in either what you may consider to be a good or bad light in reference to your expectations. Some people are going to exceed your expectations. Some people are not. Some people are not going to exceed your expectations. It doesn't always mean that the people that don't exceed your expectations aren't doing their very best. That because this is the thing, people, if you make it about you and you don't have the discernment because of the way you feel about something to be able to see and recognize effort on other people's part, even though you don't believe it may be up to your standards, you've failed.
Absolutely. That's good. I like that. That is very true. So, Gus, you know, in closing out, is there anything that you'd like to leave our listening audience with? Anything that, you know, any words of wisdom from Gus the Gator King?
No, I appreciate this was fun. You know, when you approached me about it, you know, I didn't really know. I don't typically kind of do stuff, you know, but I mean, I thought, well, it'll be entertaining and it'll be Eddie and it'll be fun. So it'll be good.
Yeah. Yeah. So once I get this into the editing room, you're going to have a blast with it. But, you know, in closing, Gus, what is the one message? Because, you know, we are called Leading Through Adversity. And, you know, most of the times when there's a leadership change or a new leader's brought up or something, it's usually because of some sort of adversity, either caused by the former leader, or if it was caused by the former leader, the new leader is going to take on that adversity now. What would you leave a leader who is currently facing some type of adversity and is feeling as if he or she is out there on an island all by themselves because they're leaders, but they're afraid to ask for help? Mm. What would you say to them?
Well, first off, a wise man or woman surrounds himself with wise counsel.
Amen.
And if you're not willing to solicit feedback from other people, you're doing yourself a disservice, and you're also limiting your potential, and you are limiting solutions to problems. When you don't solicit feedback and you can't get good data back from people, or if you're unwilling to listen to their ideas, you know, you have to be able to adjust on the fly a lot of times, and you may take a stance on an issue, but then once you learn more about it or more information is gathered about it, you might learn that, you know, you may be misguided, you know, in the stance that you're taking or that, you know, with additional information, it makes more sense to take a different approach or to consider different options. So, you know, I think when you talk about like police chiefs and sheriffs you know, people that are, you know, mayors and people like that, that are going to come in, say they get elected to a new office, what's done is done. I mean, it does you no good to sit around rehashing stuff that's happened in the past, and, you know, and you cannot use the failures or perceived failures, sometimes whatever they may be, of the person who was before you. You can't use that as a crutch, you know, while you're there. What's done is done. You're there now. You have to own what you're doing and take responsibility for what you're doing. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And you need to figure it out. You know, you can't turn around and say, well, you know, when Chief so-and-so was here and he set all this stuff up, he's gone. He's already gone. He's done. And that's over with. And, you know, you're not going to accomplish anything by sitting around and being critical of somebody that's not even in the picture anymore. You don't accomplish anything by being critical of anybody, you know, most generally. Now, I mean, you know, if you want to be hard on somebody, be hard on yourself. You know, that's what I find with a lot of people is, you know, I don't like to sit around and talk about this, that, what went wrong, this, whatever. If something's over, it's done. Now it's okay. How do we fix it from here? And then own whatever direction you take. If you take a direction and it doesn't work out, you have to own it. As long as you can, you know, you're transparent and you can explain to people why you did what you did, and that it's reasonable and rational under the set of circumstances, then there's not, you know, people see things as, oh, well, you know, I tried this and it didn't work out and it was a failure. Well, it's a learning experience first off. But you know, you, if you can rationalize and justify why you did something and it doesn't work out, refine it. And maybe next time it does work, you know, maybe you were off base because you didn't consider every aspect of something before you acted. You know, just because you know, you hear a lot of people talk, a lot of successful people talk about how many times they failed over and over and over and over again. And the ones that ultimately succeed are the ones that learn from it and adapt and adjust, or learn to, you know, conduct more research or to consider different options or what have you.
Amen. You know, God, Gus, you see, I knew I made the right decision. I'm bringing you on the show because, I mean, you exactly said everything that leading through adversity is, unmasking leadership, what it's all about. You know, just to close it up here really quick, you're absolutely right. You know, failure is the mother of all success. I mean, you know, the other day I had somebody, you know, tell me the other day, they said, you know, why do you keep trying to do this? You always try to do this one thing, yet you're always coming up short and you can't seem to get there. And I said, well, what am I supposed to do? Just stop. I said, every time that I fail, I got to take a different approach to it to see if I can make it work. And he's all like, oh, well, that's a good point. I said, I'm not doing it the same way over and over. And finally, you know, this person was really shocked when it finally worked, you know. After many, many attempts, you know, the issue that we put in play finally worked, and, you know, failure is the mother of all success. So with that, Gus, you know, I know you've had a long day, and, you know, our audience is probably wanting us to get off the airwaves as well. Cause they're probably like, hey, you know what? We signed up for a 30-minute podcast, not a 2-hour one. So, with that said, Gus, you know, I just want to say thank you very much, man. It's an honor and a privilege to be your friend. And I consider myself very blessed to have had the opportunity to meet such a great guy. And, you know, I just want to say thank you for being out here and thank you for being a friend to me,
sir. Well, thank you. And the same goes for you. And like I said, you know, you're going the right direction. You know, it's just like anything else. You know, hard work pays off, Bubba.
Yes, sir, it does. All right. With that, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, this is Leading Through Adversity, Unmasking Leadership. We'll see you next week.